Welcome to the She Recovers podcast. I'm Taryn Strong, co-founder with my mother Dawn Nickel of She Recovers. She Recovers believes that we are all recovering from something. And here on She Recovers podcast, we examine the healing power of connection and intentional living, as well as what happens in our lives when we put down our past stories and pick up our soul's true purpose. In this episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Sherry Hampton. Sherry is from San Diego, and she is a sober enthusiast, speaker, and a founder of Served Up Sober, the nonprofit initiative that offers holistic support services for the recovery community. In this episode, Sherry shared how in her first year of sobriety, she lost 6 loved ones, including her father. And she shares about how that helped her stay sober in that first year. She shares her wisdom about the importance of pivoting, loving yourself, saying no, and learning to love the suck when brand new to recovery. She also opened up about changing her story around not being enough and having to work for love. If you are in the San Diego area on November 19th, 2019, we are going to be there as a part of our She Recovers Creating Connections tour, and Sherry will be speaking at that event. So all the information is on our website, sherecovers.co. Enjoy. All right. Welcome. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in and joining this conversation with Sherry Hampton from Served Up Sober. This is a conversation that I have been excited about since the very beginning of the podcast, when we started really brainstorming podcasts and I started thinking about the fun conversations I could have and the people that I wanted to have conversations with. Sherry was one of the first people that came to mind. So thank you, Sherry, for taking the time to be here today.
Oh, for sure. Thank you for having me, Taryn. I'm geeked to be on here with you.
I love you. One of the reasons I was so excited to chat with you is because, Sherry, when I'm scrolling through my Instagram and anything of yours pops up, I get so excited because I know that anything that you post is going to resonate so deeply. And I love when you are talking in your car chat. They are the most inspiring chats ever. I am like on the other side of my phone cheering you on, and just everything you're saying is just changing. I could feel it changing me on a cellular level.
So that's crazy. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm usually venting. Right. So but that's crazy amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I love it. Thank you for sharing that part of yourself with us all in that way. So for those of you who have not had the pleasure of knowing you or meeting you in real life or in the recovery space, I'm wondering if you could share what brought you into the recovery space. If you were struggling with a behavior or a relationship or a past event or all of these, or was it something else?
Oh, wow. It was definitely all of that. I can identify definitely with your message. We're all recovering from something, right? And for me, it was quite a bit of stuff. I think what brought me into recovery was my addiction to alcohol. And I was really kind of at the brink of either probably death or recovery when I recovered in 2015. And what's interesting about that, Taryn, is that in 2015, my dad died, and I knew that he was going to die. It was something that we were, preparing for. But in that same year, we lost 5 other people. And that's something that we weren't ready for. We weren't expecting that to happen. And so I think what initially brought me into this space was knowing that I needed to kind of clean up, so to speak, to get ready to bury my father. But then what kept me in the space was just this resolve that I was able to develop as we continued to bury people, and understanding that my story had shifted and it had pivoted from one of surviving alcohol to surviving death and grieving and how do you get through that process. And so what I kind of wanted to do was be able to share that experience with other people. And so that's kind of the short, straight, you know, line between 2 points version of my story.
Yeah. And I didn't know that part of your story. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it's weird because I think a lot of people want to hear the, how did you get here part of it? And that's so long. I mean, I drank for such a long time. But then there was this second half of it that actually happened in my sobriety year that really kind of nailed it, kind of just sealed the deal for me that, you know, I just couldn't chase death with a cocktail. It was just really a bad idea. And, you know, people kept passing. And so in a way, it kept me sober because I didn't have time to relapse. Does that make sense?
It does.
You know, I just really didn't have the time. It went from my dad passed at the end of May, and then an aunt passed the end of June, and then we lost another family member mid-July, and then my uncle in August. And so it was almost like whenever I kind of caught my breath and was thinking, my God, I could have a cocktail. This would calm this down real nicely. Another person would pass away. And so in a way, it probably saved my sobriety. When I look back on it now, I'm grateful. You know, we were losing, you know, our the leaders of our family. So it wasn't like we lost anyone unexpectedly. We didn't lose anyone, you know, young in life. They were all, you know, pretty much the elders. And so that made it a little bit easier, but I'm grateful for them, that they were able to kind of cement this process for me because I didn't have time to relapse. I just didn't have the time.
And isn't that a beautiful moment when I know that I've been able to, since recovery, look at these moments that have been so painful, yet at the same time, holding that same container of gratitude, like feeling the pain and the gratitude all in one, and experiencing both of those at once is quite extraordinary.
It is, and it's really unexpected because when you're going through something like death or grief, you really are not expecting that you're going to be able to have gratitude for that moment, right? I think you're just looking for, how can I medicate myself? How can I numb myself out? How can I just go through the motions? And what happened for me is I just began to really have a sense of gratitude for what was happening.
And do you think, I know that I'm sure this is true. I think it's true for everyone, but what brought you into the space was alcohol. I know for me, what brought me into the space were substances as well. But of course, I very quickly learned and realized that the substances weren't actually the problem. It was everything that was underneath, right? I was using substances to cope. So when you entered the space and alcohol was what brought you through that door, have you then since been able to identify if there was anything underneath that you were using alcohol as a coping tool with?
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah. You know, I just being extremely insecure, right?
Yeah.
And being so afraid to show up naked and vulnerable. And in fact, when I first came into space, you know, my kind of slogan was vulnerable is the new arrogant, because I think sometimes we put on this mask of confidence or of arrogance of, you know, I got it all together. You know, nobody can see me, you know? But I was extremely insecure, and I was really, you know, socially awkward. You know, I couldn't interact with anyone without, you know, having something to kind of calm me down or make me a little bit more comfortable. And so that was one of the things that was underneath. And, you know, just a lot of anxiety from you know, past experiences that I hadn't really healed. I was a stuffer. I still am a stuffer. I'm not going to lie. Let me just be honest. I still stuff things and I pick and choose on what I want to unpack. But for me, there was just a lot of social awkwardness and I was extremely insecure. And, you know, if I can be honest, Taryn, I think I never really recovered from my parents' divorce. And I, you know, that just came up right now. And, you know, I work hard at, I think that as we become adults, we have to own our own lives and we have to be responsible. But I think that I was still in many ways still grieving something that I thought could have been and kind of carrying that with me, you know, that baggage, so to speak.
And how old were they when, how old were you, pardon me, when your parents divorced?
I was two. And, you know, I loved both of them just desperately loved both of them. And, you know, I was a daddy's girl and looked up to him and he was so sad. And so I think at a very early age, I figured out if I could, you know, what can I do? What can I do to make my dad happier? What can I do to make him feel better? What can I do to make my mom happy? How can I make her better? She's really, really sad. So you got this 2-year-old, you know, kind of jumping through these hoops as best she could. And so I began to do that in my relationships, right? Where, you know, how can I fix this? How can you be better? What can I do to make you better? And it just began to be a really unhealthy way of getting through stuff.
I have chills. I can totally relate, right? Sherry. Yeah, my parents, they divorced when I was 2 as well. And I, at a very young age, I can remember being this tiny toddler, this little girl, and taking on this responsibility of, okay, well, I guess that it's my responsibility to take care of my dad now. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she met my stepfather, Al. He's been in our life since I was 4. And I really took on that responsibility even heavier and even more when, you know, my mom remarried and she moved on and my dad hadn't. And so I really started to develop, that's, you know, I say that my relationship with my dad was my first codependent relationship.
Absolutely. Because
I took that on. So I can totally relate. Thank you for naming that and bringing that forward.
Yep. That was me. I wanted him to be okay. Desperately. Yeah. Wanted him to be happy, and he just wasn't.
Yeah.
He just wasn't.
Oh, I'm just holding little Sherry in my heart right now. So sweet.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you have siblings?
I do. So for my parents, I was the only child from, you know, from their union, but I have half brothers on my mom's side. She obviously remarried, and then my dad remarried much later in life. I think I was 16 when he remarried. And so I have a half brother and half sister on his side. But from them, I'm an only child.
Only child. Yeah. Wow.
A whole other set of issues, right? From that. So
we'll talk about that in the next podcast.
Right. Yeah. Because that would take a minute.
Part 2. Yes.
That's part 2.
Now, exactly. As you look back at your life since that moment when you entered recovery, let's say, what does recovery look like for you now? And what does your patchwork of recovery look like?
Oh my goodness. You know, it's one word and it's pivot. It's pivot. Being able to know and expect and look forward to change has been really, really it's been probably the number one thing that has kept me stable. I mean, it's not easy. And I think people get this whole game twisted up. Recovery is work. It's simple work, right? It's not complicated, but you really have to be willing to invest in the work, and the work is just loving yourself. I mean, it's kind of like I'm the test tube of my love. And so when I start pouring little things into me, like You know, making sure that I'm meditating, which I'm not doing right now, and I can tell the effects, or making sure that I'm exercising, you know, I'm trying to eat well, or trying to just keep enough emotional bandwidth for me. I don't know why is that so hard, Taryn? Like, why is taking care of us hard for us? Because I struggle with it.
I don't have the answer, but whoever finds it out first, let's make sure we let each other know.
We
complicate things. We complicate everything. And I'm working with an amazing coach right now. Her name's Angela Sumner. And she has been telling me exactly what you just said. It's so simple, Taryn. It's so simple. Stop complicating everything. And just, yeah, play the game. It's just a game. Play. Remember to play. Mm-hmm. And just love yourself.
It's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
I was thinking, what
does that look like? So you're saying, you know, you should meditate, but you haven't been trying to move your body, trying to eat healthy. What else do you do? Do you do therapy or coaching or meetings?
So I don't do meetings. I'm not really part of the, well, I'm not really, I'm not, let me just go with that. I'm not part of this, of 12 step. I did go in the beginning. And I think if there's a plug for AA, I can give it right here at the beginning. In the beginning, I did go, but I didn't stay long, and I just wasn't ready for all the dogma. And for me, I needed something where I focused more attention on me, not in a selfish way, but in a more self-reliant way. And so I just have a really strong regimen. In the beginning, I had chiropractors, I had an acupuncturist, I had a nutritionist, I had a fitness coach, and I was probably with one of them probably 4 days out of the week. I mean, I needed that much support in the beginning. And so I used to do, when I first got on Instagram, I used to do what I called Holistic Fridays. And basically I would just take everybody on a little field trip with me. I would start Holistic Fridays at my chiropractor. And so I'd get an adjustment there. And then I'd follow that up with my acupuncturist, and I'd get some work there with her. And then I'd finish with body work. And I did that every single Friday. And so for me, the goal was, if I could get through the stress of the week, and chocolate was a whole separate issue, because when me and alcohol broke up, me and chocolate were doing it. We were doing,
oh, what kind of chocolate?
We were doing nasty things. Oh my God, we went together hard, and so yeah. You know, I couldn't let that go. But that's what I did every Friday, and that's kind of what kept me. I have kind of like a condensed version of that now. I don't quite need that much support, but everything that I do to support my recovery stems from a holistic perspective. Every single thing.
Yeah.
Every single thing.
Yeah. Amazing. I love that. Holistic Fridays. Perfect.
Right?
Yeah. How, and today's Friday, what are you going to do today? Are you still doing Holistic Fridays?
Now they're just kind of all over, because there was something weird. I kind of needed that triple whammy on Fridays. You know what I mean? Now I don't. So I kind of spread it out. I've been to get some work. I was in the chair on Monday. I probably won't do anything today. I'm taking my mom to see Steely Dan. And I know she's so we're going to do that. But I do try to get something in at least every 4 days. Every 4 days I try to do something. You know, obviously exercise as much as I can, but every 4 days I'm trying to, you know, put a cherry on top of that with either a massage or some chiropractic work, an acupuncture visit, something to just keep me dialed in. It feels good. It feels good.
Yeah. Now, Sherry, what did your stories about your life used to be? Like, what did you used to believe about yourself? And how are your stories about yourself and your life different now? And if I can add one more layer to that, how did you move through the unknowing time where you may not have known what was true, or where you were kind of just believing everything that your mind was telling you?
Oh, wow, Taryn. that's tough. Okay, so my stories before, I I guess the main story is that no one would love me if I didn't work for it. You know, that it wasn't that I wasn't enough to just love just as I was. That I would have to work really, really hard to get someone to see me or to acknowledge me or to want to love me. And so I think that was probably the main story. I was constantly working, you know, for that acceptance. And it's hard. I was talking to one of my practitioners when I got sober 5 years. I don't see her as much now, but she really got me through a tough time. And she would explain to me that my lens, the lens that I was using to see life, would more often than not attract a lens that would not be good for me. And so if I was approaching life from the lens of, oh, I can do this for you and I can do that for you, and oh, let me fix this and you know, let me show you how this can be better, and constantly doing things for other people, then I would attract people that needed someone to do things for them, right? Right. And so I kept attracting people that had the left out, left abandoned, left alone lens. And it's kind of like that was a weird fit, because the more I kept saying, oh no, I can do for you, do for you, do for you, the more they would need do for me, do for me, do for me. Yeah. And it wasn't until, you know, we really deep dove into some work that I was able to say, oh wow, I'm going to have to change this lens. I'm about to take these glasses off so I could see, you know, and it was so hard. I remember the exercise, and this is getting personal. You're good, Taryn. You're pulling something out here.
But Erin Wickersham, we can blame her for this.
Maybe this will help somebody though. You know, I was in a relationship, and I knew that it wasn't a good relationship, and we were able to kind of go our separate ways. And I got a phone call from them asking me for some help. So I'm sitting with my practitioner. I said, this has happened. You know, I haven't talked to this person in a year, and here they come and they're asking, and I feel so bad. I feel guilty. I feel awful. I'm stressed about it. I don't even want to return the call. You know, I don't even want to look at my phone. You know, I was tripping. And she said, this is a great opportunity, because all you really have to do is say no. Don't say, oh, I'm sorry, I wish I could, or could I, you know, maybe if you ask me, just say no. And the anxiety that came around that was just crazy. It took me 3 days. And then I would say that my stories shifted when I texted, because I was a coward. I didn't call, but I did text. Right? And I just said no.
And how did you feel in that moment?
You know, I felt scared until I typed N-O and hit send. And then I panicked and I waited and I waited and I waited. And I looked at my phone. No, my phone on? Is it charged up? Because I was expecting something. And I got nothing. In fact, I haven't gotten anything in about 4 years.
Wow.
But I went back to my practitioner and I said, I think I owe you more money, right? Because I did not pay you enough for that. But it shifted. I think my story shifted right then. And I was able to say, you know, this is your lens. You've been carrying this lens around since your dad. Of let me fix it, let me do it. But you can use this lens in healthier ways, right? And so out of that is how Served came out, kind of indirectly. Served came out of a lot of stuff, but part of it was her saying, this is your lens, but you can use it in healthier ways so that it doesn't show up in unhealthy ways. And so that's probably when the story shifted for me, is when I was able to first recognize what my lens is and then recognize how it wasn't working and what I could do to make it work for me and for my life.
Perfect. Yeah, it's that awareness and the pivot, which you've already talked about, and the shift in that energy, right?
Absolutely. I love that word, pivot. I just love it.
I do too. I'm going to use it all the time now. Thank you.
I love it.
What are the stories you tell yourself about yourself now? Do you believe now, do you know, because it's true, do you know that you are enough, just exactly the way you are?
I'm working on it. You know, it gets better. I think that every single time I look back and see how this thing called life is unfolding and creating, I do begin to feel like, oh, maybe I am a little dope, low key. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I can use this as an example. When I saw, you know, She Recovers doing their thing in New York, and I kind of got the tail end. I was late to the party and I didn't realize what was happening. And I said, you know, one day I'm going to meet them. Right. And I'm going to be talking to one of them and I'm going to tell them all about Served, and it's going to be really great. And to be able to sit here and use that example. And I have a lot of examples of that if you just acknowledge where you are and trust the process and be willing to pivot and shift as life begins to unfold, that good things happen. And so I think I am beginning to think that, yeah, you are, you know, you're a good egg, you know?
Yes, you are. And if you're ever having a day where you forget, just call me and I'll remind you.
I'm gonna call you. Am I a good egg, Taryn?
Yes, you are. Now, many people struggle to apply the words alcoholic or addict or trauma, divorce, or other triggering words to their lives. So they might stay in an old story for longer than they need to because they don't have language to move into a new story. Mm-hmm. So did you or do you wrestle with certain words during your shift? Or how do you, what's your language perspective?
So for me, I don't struggle with any words. And I gotta tell you this came from one of our coaches, Lynn. So I can't claim this great analogy, but I share it as often as I can. And we were talking about this one day about the whole showing up at a meeting and saying, hello, my name is, or if you want to speak, my name is Sherry and I'm an alcoholic, or my name is Sherry and I'm an addict. And she said, you know, I just don't get that. I don't get that because I'm about 40 pounds overweight. And every morning I don't address myself as, hello, I'm Lynn, I'm 40 pounds overweight. I don't do that in any of my conversations, but yet I wake up every day and I'm 40 pounds overweight. And so, you know, but at the same time, I don't have a problem saying I'm an alcoholic. Do I feel like I need to remind myself of it every day? Absolutely not. But I don't have a problem saying that I am an alcoholic. It just doesn't bother me. Yeah. It just doesn't bother me. What about you?
Yeah, I have no problem saying that I'm an addict. I have recently switched my language to just saying that I'm a person in recovery. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can go either way. I do see though the side of, you know, our words are so powerful. Our words are spells, right? And they hold so much energy. And so I can totally see how, if I'm not a part of meetings, but if I was to say, hi, I'm Taryn and I'm an addict every day, I wonder if that might kind of keep me at a different vibration as opposed to me saying, hi, I'm Taryn, I'm in recovery.
Exactly.
But I think whatever works for people. And for me, yeah, I can go either way. I'm not too fussed. I grew up in a 12-step home. So my earliest memories are hearing people say, hi, I'm Dawn and I'm an addict. So I think it's just like a part of me, but whatever works for people, whatever works, I support.
Yeah. You know, I totally feel the same way. I think people, main thing is I just want people to get better. And if it doesn't matter to me, if you identify with 12-step or if you don't, or if you, if you, you know, it just, I just want you to get better because you deserve it. You deserve it.
Yes.
You deserve it.
I have another question kind of related to that then. What advice would you give to someone new seeking recovery, recovery from anything, any of the things? But what advice would you maybe have given yourself when you were seeking this path, or just somebody brand new to this journey?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So when I was exercising right after I got sober, remember I had all these people that I was working with, and I mean, I would cry with all of them. Cause I was just an emotional wreck, and I was working out with my trainer once, and, you know, I thought that we were going to jump right into a circuit and we were going to do some stuff. And he was like, no, you have to earn the right to squat. And so, no, you won't be doing any squats for probably about 6 weeks. And I remember saying to him, you know what, John, this sucks. And he was like, learn to love the suck. learn to love it. And so I guess probably in my, I would say it with as much love as I could, but I would probably say learn to love the suck. It sucks in the beginning.
Yes.
It does.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it?
There is nothing fun about it.
There's not. Let's just be real. Let's not sugarcoat anything.
There's nothing fun about it. You have to really think ahead and visualize what the possibilities are. But in the moment, I mean, it just sucks. The first 3 weeks, I was laughing and crying at the same time. I was, you know, not sleeping, pacing the floors. I mean, you know. And so that's what I would tell them. And if you can accept that and know that it's temporary and build a certain squad around you, people that are going to pour love on you and are going to be there for you and understand that you're going through a sucky period in your life, then the worst that's going to happen is you learn to love the suck. That's it.
Perfect. Amen. I'm stealing that. Thank you, John. John was your coach's name, right?
Yes,
your trainer?
John. Yeah. John Fasulo, look him up. He's amazing. I still work out with him. I still work out with John. He's that good.
Now I have three more questions, but they're all related, I think.
Okay.
So
this is fun, Taryn. I'm having a good time with you.
I know. I could keep talking. I get to see you. So those of you who are listening, Sherry is speaking at our event in San Diego in November.
Yay.
So I will put more information about that in the show notes. So I'm excited to spend time in person.
Me too.
So my questions that I'm going to put into one, because they're all related in my opinion, is how important is community and connection to you in the recovery realm? What dreams have come to you since entering recovery? And the reason I'm asking those, because it's going to segue me into asking you to share about Served Up Sober and the amazing work that you're doing.
Awesome. I'd love to answer those questions. First question, community and connection, right?
Yeah.
It's everything. It's everything. And, you know, it's especially everything for a space, I think, that doesn't include enough Black and brown faces. Yeah. And so I think that to be able to be, vulnerable and naked and willing to kind of stand in the space and hold space for those that I know are coming. They're coming. They're either down on their knees in church, or they are, you know, on clenched fist in their bedrooms. They haven't got it yet, but they're coming. And so for me, community and connection is everything, and being able to show up for a community, I think that is underrepresented, and say, this is what it looks like. How cool is this? Is everything. It's everything. The dream since recovery is to use the lens that that I have. You know what I mean? It's my lens. There's nothing I can do with it. I mean, it's my eyes. It's the way I see the world. Is how can I be of service? How can I make this better for you? But I think the healthy way to use it is to use it in the world. And so that's the biggest dream since recovery, is saying, this is your lens, this lens of service. And how can you give it back in a way that's meaningful, in a way that's healthy, in a way that doesn't take away from you, but actually pours into you? And so that's what served is all about, is being able to give back in a way that pours love into others, but actually every single day it's pouring into me. Every single day. Every single day. You know, I was in class last night, because I'm interning for working in a treatment facility, and that's podcast number 3 that we'll do, Taryn, one day. But there was a great TEDx show, a TEDx talk that we watched. And it was talking about the adverse childhood experiences and the trauma that comes from that, the ACEs and the childhood, the trauma that comes from ACEs. And I, you know, I was like, wow, do I need to change my mission again? You know, first it was, you know, started off as just doing social events and having social options for people that were in recovery. And then I realized, no, I'm not really that social. You know, people would come and my partner would be like, baby, go out there. You need to talk to those people. And I'd be like, I don't know those people. I can't. She's like, it's your event. You have to socialize. And I was like, oh, baby, this isn't it. This is not, I'm not going to do it. I just couldn't do it. I would put it up, these meetups, and they would come, and then I was like, what am I supposed to do now? Everybody's just kind of sitting here. And she's like, you're supposed to socialize. There's that word pivot, right? I said, no, yes. Let's pivot off of this, because this isn't working. And so I really started looking at, what is it that I'm really trying to do? And, you know, in a nutshell, what I was trying to do and what I ended up doing is creating what I did when I got sober. And so Served Up Sober has really come out of that experiment that I was a part of when I was detoxed by Dr. Greer and Corey in their home, which was, it was completely holistic. I was detoxed on a raw diet. I was exposed to a way of thinking and that I had never been exposed to. I didn't know anything about theta healing or going to the chiropractor or you know, using acupuncture to work on my nervous system. I just, it was all new for me, and it worked after 30 plus years of struggling with addiction. And so I said, you know what, you need to take it back to that. Stop trying to be social. That's not your jam. It's not what you do. And take it back to being able to offer these services to people that have not been able to either afford them or haven't been exposed to it. And so Served is just basically a holistic option of support services and tools for you if you're trying to heal and just trying to be better. That's it.
Amazing. Amazing.
That's it in a nutshell. Yeah.
It's wonderful work, and I've loved watching it blossom, and all of the workshops look just, they're life-changing, and I love how you have used what's worked for you. I can see that now. I didn't realize that until now, that this is just really you sharing what your tools were, and I think that's what it's all about. I think that's what we need to do, is when we find something that works for us, share it with as many people as we can.
That's it.
And that study that you're talking about, I'm going to add that to the show notes. I love that TED Talk. I've actually incorporated that into my yoga teacher training. I'm doing my first She Recovers yoga teacher training at the end of October. And we are spending a very large chunk of time, because we're focusing on teaching trauma-informed yoga. And we are spending a lot of time talking about the ACEs, the ACE study. And I'm going to share that TED Talk with, what is her name? Nadine
Burke Harris.
Yeah.
The talk was phenomenal.
Yeah. I love it.
It was so, I mean, I had to hold it together in class. I'm like, you're not going to cry in this classroom now. Just hold yourself together. But it was, yeah, it's really good. That's cool that you're putting it into practice, into your practice. How will that work?
The ACE studies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just for us to be aware of, you know, everybody who comes into a yoga class is either experiencing stress or chronic stress or PTSD or mm-hmm. trauma. And so just knowing that in these yoga spaces, what we're wanting to do with trauma-informed yoga is create a space where people can reconnect with their body in a safe, empowering way to themselves. And just knowing that every single form that we do in a yoga class is a landmine. Every single form can be triggering and can possibly, potentially, lead somebody to disassociate, for example. So what we're going to do in my training is we're going to rewind and go back to the very beginning and really spend a lot of time learning about trauma, and just so that we can have a bigger picture understanding of it all and just have a really holistic lens on it all, right?
That sounds amazing.
Thank you. I'm really excited.
It sounds, you know what? It sounds amazing and it sounds so timely, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Well, Sherry, I could keep talking, but this just means that we're just going to have to, set up podcast interview number 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, et cetera.
I'm excited to see you guys. When you touch down, I've been in touch with Dawn, and maybe we can do dinner or something when you guys are in town.
Oh, please. Absolutely. If you have space, we're hoping to go a little bit early so that we can spend time with you. So
awesome.
Do you have anything else you want to say to the listeners before we go?
This is a great podcast. It's a great space for us. The She Recovers space is just, it's fantastic. I'm so grateful. I can't wait for Miami. You know, we were posting the pictures over this past week and I was like, damn, that was an amazing event.
Wow.
So I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to you guys. I'm grateful that you've allowed me to come on and just chat with you a little bit. Thank you so much.
Thank you for all of the work that you're doing, and thank you for showing up and allowing yourself to be seen despite the nervousness that mm-hmm. can get it all. So we adore you. We love you so much, Sherry.
Ditto. And
we'll talk to you.
Thanks, Taryn.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the She Recovers podcast. We hope you will share, rate, subscribe, and help us spread the word. You can always find out more about She Recovers, our intentions and guiding principles, upcoming events and retreats, recovery coaching, online yoga, and so much more on our website, sherecovers.co. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter so that we can stay in touch.